You are listening to Devil We Know, a true crime podcast, which may contain adult themes, explicit language, and graphic depictions of violence. Portions of this show may be traumatic for those under 18. Listener discretion is advised.
Yeah, the Burnt Hand Fire Company here is command central for these search efforts right now, and it is a busy place. This is day two of the search for 18-year-old Linda Stoltzfus. She is 5'10 and 125 pounds. She was last seen wearing a tan dress, white apron, and white cape. She has brown hair and blue eyes. Investigators tell me this morning they expanded the geographic search area. They tell me this is standard procedure, not because of any tip or new information they have received. Stoltzfus was last seen on Sunday around 12:30 on Stumptown Road at an Amish farm where she had attended church. Investigators tell me her parents called police early Monday morning when she did not return to their home on Beachdale Road. Police are now asking anyone who may have noticed something out of the ordinary in that area on Sunday to give them a call. They are investigating all leads and tips. They say at this point they have no reason to believe that she was planning to leave. Now, at this point, investigators tell me they are not looking for any volunteers to help with the search efforts. They say they have experienced search teams in place, but right now they also add they are overwhelmed by the community response that they have seen over this last few hours and few days. The search here does continue. In Burnt Hand, Lancaster County, Ann Shannon, WGAL News 8.
In this episode of Devil We Know, a young Amish girl makes her way down a country road before youth service that night, only to never show up. Only a mysterious passerby may hold the truth of what happened to Linda Stoltzfus, but he still isn't keen on telling anyone. Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, a place far removed from the usual passage of time. Legend has it that in 1734, two weary surveyors arrived at a crude log hut that served as an inn. These two surveyors, hard at work on surveying the old Philadelphia Pike between Lancaster and Philadelphia, considered whether it was better to forge ahead to Lancaster for a place to stay or to put up at this cabin for the night. Deliberations subsided eventually, and at dusk, upon entering the crude inn, one of the surveyors declared that a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. The phrase means that what you already have, however small, has more worth than something you don't yet have. Simple though as the phrase was, the innkeeper was struck by it, and as legend goes, his little inn soon became the Bird in Hand Inn. From that point forward, the village where these two surveyors rested their heads in 1734 had a new name. While the area had first been inhabited by indigenous people until the European arrivals in the early 18th century, over time the village was a settlement for Quakers and went on to become a prominent stop on the Underground Railroad, with over 1,000 slaves passing through to freedom. Toward the end of the 18th century, the area eventually saw the Amish join other German-speaking denominations, such as German Lutheran, Reformed, and Baptist, who resided in the area. However, despite the variations of faith and community that lived there, it is the Amish that most remember and picture when we think of Lancaster County. but picture buggies, bonnets, a simpler approach to life, free from the shackles of modern-day existence. A life centered around family, faith, and home. Despite this idyllic outlook in what is now known as Amish country, there are times when trouble still finds its way to these communities. And on June 21st, 2020, the community of Bird in Hand, Pennsylvania, saw their peaceful existence invaded by the world outside in one of the worst ways possible. Father's Day holds a lot of different traditions throughout the United States, but not so much in Amish communities. It's a public holiday that, unlike Christmas or Easter, sees no real celebration in the Amish faith. However, one thing that holds true of every Father's Day is that it falls on a Sunday, and Sundays are special days indeed. The Amish of Lancaster County have a number of specific rituals that are followed on Sunday, and more so in relation to their reverence of church itself. Linda Stoltzfus, an 18-year-old woman living in Bird in Hand, Pennsylvania, was one of many attending church that day. And while many had already gone home after service, Linda stayed behind to help with the dishes. Depending on the week, the after-service spread may have consisted of coffee, bread, apple butter, or even something called church spread, which is a mix of peanut butter and marshmallow. There's even the possibility of pickles, beets, cheeses, and in some cases, a pie made from dried apple called schnitz. Whatever the light lunch offered to the church members for fellowship had been eaten, and Linda, a timid and dutiful woman, was happy to help clean up. She did so with the help of a friend and fellow member, Lillian Ebersole, who had come to church with Linda and the rest of Linda's family. The two did their work and chatted, eventually ending the conversation outside the barn where the service took place. When they did, Linda, who was used to walking, said she would head home before youth service to change out of her formal church clothes and into something far more suitable for the youth group. With little thought to what was a normal routine, Linda took off, barefoot, her stockings tied up in a knot, and carried with her her shoes. Fully prepped for her usual route, she walked down the road that led to her home. As Lillian watched her leave sometime between 12:30 and 1 o'clock that afternoon, she had no clue that she would be the last friendly face to talk to her that day. Linda had gone to church in her usual attire, a black head covering and tan dress, complete with a white apron cape, as is traditional. After all, Linda was unmarried, and most unmarried women in Amish country wear the black bonnet, even at church, until the day of their wedding. Still, while her outfit was appropriate for church, most of it was less so for social gatherings, yet like her youth group. And so she made her way down Stumpman Road and would plan for an eventual left on Beechdale, where she and her family resided. This route, as Lillian and Linda's father later pointed out, was the normal way in which Linda came to church, and it was the most likely route for her to take when heading home. There was no need for a deviation. As Lillian, along with other friends of Linda's, could attest, there was no indication Linda ever wanted to leave for an impromptu trip, or even planned a trip. She wasn't one to socialize with the non-Amish, whom the Amish referred to as the English, regardless of nationality. In fact, she was a shy girl who was believed to be happy in her lifestyle. It's not that she wasn't friendly, though. Linda was said by her friends and her family alike to be nice, caring, and always wanted to know about other people. Still, she never courted, never had a boyfriend, to the tight-knit community's recollection. And she taught at an Amish school. She tutored children with learning disorders in the community, and interviews far and wide show she adored her family. Nothing in June of 2020 was abnormal for her, and she remained just as active as ever in her church and in her youth group. That said, when 2 o'clock came and went, her good friends from the youth group still awaited Linda. Anna Beiler, Kate King, and Anna Stoltzfus, with a slightly different spelling, all wondered where she could be, until they chalked it up to her being homesick. After all, it was not like her to be tardy to the group meeting, and given that it lasted from about 2:30 p.m. to about 11 p.m., there was no reason they could think of why she'd miss it at all if she were healthy. These three friends had seen Linda only recently on that Friday, and had not noted any oddness in her behavior or any problems she might have been having. Just like Lillian, they all affirmed later that Linda had been happy in the community, content living the lifestyle they had all known since birth. And it was from this that police later concluded Linda had no reason to leave unannounced. All the same, a no-show in an Amish community is unheard of. As a highly communicative and close body, this settlement sees active participation from nearly everyone. Duty and humility are chief tenets of the Amish faith, and to shirk such duty is not a deal to be taken lightly. But if Linda was not the type to shirk, then where could she be? At home, waiting with bated breath, Linda's father, Lloyd, finally saw that his daughter had yet to come home from her youth group. Ending at 11 o'clock that night, it may have been a bit odd to see her come in later than midnight, but given that her usual method of travel was walking, maybe awaiting her arrival was all that Lloyd could do. Nevertheless, he eventually contacted the police, and after 2 a.m., officers responded to the call to learn that Linda was, in fact, missing. They first went to check her bedroom. As Lloyd recalled, Linda's usual routine. She changed at home before attending youth group, as she had told Lillian, and had done this so many times before. But when the officers looked for the clothes described, they found nothing. The bedroom was neat, organized, and well put together, and it lacked any sign of Linda having changed into her new outfit that day. It was clear then to Lloyd that Linda had never made it home after church in the first place. The beautifully modest building off Stumptown Road, with a gray top buggy in the open garage, was the last place she'd been seen. And they'd have to retrace her steps, first talking with Lillian and learning that Linda had, in fact, been acting normal that day. However, the normality stopped when police began venturing further down the road, whose route to Linda's house didn't even total a mile. They had already learned from Linda's father that Linda was not one to cut across fields, and even less so in her formal church attire. It was much more likely, especially given the topography and location of nearby Mill Creek, that Linda was going to travel by road, as was her Sunday custom. But while the road proved to be the only place to start the search, there wasn't much to go on until police learned that there was a suspicious vehicle reported not far, about 3 miles or so, from the area where Linda disappeared. Trooper Josh Whiteside headed to Ronks, Pennsylvania, to respond to the call, and the witness there reported a red Kia sedan parked behind the business at this address, an Amish garage builder. The witness reported the vehicle entering the property at 5 p.m., 2 days after Linda's disappearance, and it was reported to Whiteside that the man driving the car left to walk around the building. This man, thought to be white or Hispanic, looked into all the windows and doors of the establishment, evidently searching for something. But this wasn't the oddest thing about the visit. The oddest thing was that the driver left, only to return later that day, parking in the same space next to the nearby railroad tracks, just in front of a vast wooded area that stood beside it. Trooper Whiteside was unable to make contact with the driver before it made off once more. However, the witness that reported the vehicle and the driver had taken pictures of its make and model and gave these to the officer. This garage builder named Jonathan wasn't the only person to notice a strange vehicle, though. Not even a week later, the police were able to interview other witnesses reporting similar sightings, including a couple whose name, though unrelated like Jonathan, was also Stoltzfus. It's apparent by now that this name is somewhat common throughout this region of Pennsylvania. But regardless, the witnesses were not acquainted with the missing girl. This couple, Sarah and Isaac, reported not only seeing a strange car only 10 miles or so from where Linda was last seen, and about 8 miles from the business that first reported the red Kia. Sarah mentioned that the red car they saw in Gap, Pennsylvania, was carrying a female Amish person in the front seat, riding with a male driver. She saw this and waved, as is customary between Amish folk as a passerby greeting. and noted that the young woman did not wave back. That, more than anything, spoke of trouble, because the Amish are reciprocal in these greetings by tradition. On top of this, Sarah noticed the head covering that was sported, black, with the passenger wearing what looked to be her Sunday best. This too was odd, though only 10 miles away, the community to which Sarah belonged had a different way of dressing for church. The clothes that a woman of the Amish faith may differ depending on the day, but there's one thing that people in the area will contend. According to police affidavits made in correspondence with several Amish families of the region, young women in Sarah's area, unlike most Amish settlements, do not wear black head coverings to church. In fact, the norm for this particular district of the Amish church is for women to attend church with the white bonnet that is typically used in other sects to belie married status. More notably weird was the situation itself. Seeing as the passenger was riding in a car with a non-Amish on the Lord's Day, that was just unheard of, no matter the sect, as there are particular strictures for Amish people that keep that day holy, including not working, among other things. While Sarah could contend that all of these facts were odd, she shared one more fact that laid heavily on the investigators. The passenger looked back at Sarah, right at her, and instead of waving, gazed at her with pleading eyes. It was after all of this that Sarah shared her belief. After seeing several photos of Linda, she believed that this passenger was indeed the missing girl. Sarah and Isaac, along with Jonathan and Ronks, all had seen some strangeness. But what else could be confirmed? The police didn't have what they needed as of yet, but there was still more to learn. Gideon King III, another member of the Amish community near Sarah and Isaac, offered his report of a red or orange vehicle passing him as he drove his buggy on Amish Road, just north of the nearby state highway. He was only a mile from where Sarah and Isaac had been walking when they had seen the passenger they described. And though they didn't know Gideon, he described the same thing, an Amish woman in church attire sitting in a vehicle, which was inappropriate. All the same, he confirmed that in this small locale, Amish women did not wear black head coverings to church, and he stated that he didn't know anyone else had reported such a vehicle. Enter Isaac Esch, whose testimony was able to confirm what Jonathan had witnessed before. Esch, living on Stumptown Road, not even a half a mile down from the church, had himself seen the red vehicle in question heading down the road away from Linda's church. He noted that the car turned into Red Lane for what seemed like a minute before turning back around and heading west toward the church once more. Though his porch where he sat was 15 to 20 yards from the road, Esch was able to see the sole occupant both times it passed his home, a male driver seemingly white at first glance, with darker hair and skin, so possibly Hispanic, in other words, a similar description to whoever Jonathan saw outside of his business. Regardless, when this was confirmed, Detectives Christopher Jones and Scott Eelman knew it was time to revisit an asset they didn't have just a bit before. You see, one thing that didn't come into play until a bit later was video surveillance nearby. Bird in Hand isn't just home to Amish people, and in fact, there are businesses and homes held by Amish and non-Amish alike, some of which have made camp right there on the 500th block of Beachdale Road. One such home had a security system installed, sporting a camera which was found to have footage. However, the original video wasn't viewable, and so the FBI labs did a thorough forensic examination of it before finally making it available to view. There was plenty to notice when they finally did. Firstly, there was visible footage of Linda and a group of friends as they walked to church. There, it was clear from the get-go, Linda had on the attire that police were told about, including a black bonnet, and a light dress and apron to go with it. Then, the police looked later in the video to find a red car passing the camera's field of vision and pulling off of the road to what would be Linda's left on her way home, idling on what turned out to be an Amish farm lane. Not even 4 minutes later, a pale shape, dressed in white, walked down the road, same path leading to the church, but in the opposite direction from before. Could this be Linda? Before this question is answered, though, the investigators find a surprising twist in the footage. The person in white is approached by another person unknown, heading from Linda's left, the direction of the mystery car. This person crosses the road to the person in white, and together they leave, all in the span of 1 minute and 2 seconds. Not very much the span of time that a friendly, shy person would take to say hello, much less follow someone off of her designated path. After they leave the road in the direction of the unknown car, the footage shows once again as a red Kia Rio pulls off, displaying an LCM bumper sticker and a distinct spoiler. This looked like the confirmation the detectives needed to request a police record check, and there was a bit of success. In the database was a red-colored 2007 Kia Rio, and they even got a license plate number to go with it. What's more, this vehicle was registered to a driver who matched the descriptions offered by both Esch and Jonathan alike, a man named Justo Roberto Smoker. It was then that the detectives took note that Justo worked at a place called Dutchland Incorporated, a water treatment supplier in Gap, Pennsylvania, that was only an 8-minute drive south of where the couple, Sarah and Isaac, saw the car they described. This 34-year-old man, Justo, was once an all-star in his high school for wrestling, and he graduated with a 3.0 GPA, only to get himself arrested at age 21 for a string of robberies. 4 different businesses in a 6-day period during the summer of 2006. He admitted to these crimes, stating that he and his brother Victor did so with a BB gun. At Justo's sentencing, his parents, who adopted him at age 7, told the judge they'd be taking care of him once he got out of prison. His sentence, which required a minimum of 12 and a half years, ended in February of 2019, while his brother was released in 2016. This man was who showed up when the records came back for the Kia Rio, and so, heading out to Dutchland Incorporated, they wound up finding said vehicle in the parking lot. They waited, and soon were able to tail the Kia as it exited the parking lot and headed for the 3200 block on Lincoln Highway in Paradise, Pennsylvania. Another check confirmed with police that Justo did in fact live on the same block, in an apartment on the address seen where they pulled in. The next day, though, the detectives went in for more information from the man himself. They noted that Justo did in fact match the description given, and that he denied having any knowledge of Linda, who they mentioned had been missing. Justo offered his phone number, and the search for proof continued as detectives reviewed the video once more to confirm the time window of about 15 minutes that Linda would have disappeared in. That time window matched up with the short interaction on the video, where they saw that red Kia Rio pull in and out and watched the woman in white being taken from the road with a supposed stranger. They even slowed the footage to find an object that appeared white, sitting in the passenger seat of this car, and eventually confirmed that the car had the same sticker and spoiler as Justo's vehicle. But in a matter of being certain, they also ran a cell phone record check to find that Justo's phone had in fact been in the general area of the business that spotted him on Harvest Drive back on the 23rd of June. Now it was all connected. Witnesses had claimed that Justo was seen cleaning his car on the day of June 21st, 2020, and Justo assured that he was nowhere near the location the detectives questioned him about once they approached. However, despite a Facebook post showing him cleaning his car, they had proof of his lies, as he claimed to be nowhere near the noted places like Beachdale Road, that's where the camera was, or Stumptown Road, where the church was. They had proof on video of that, and they had proof that he'd been near Jonathan's shop, next to those woods near Leola, just days afterward. Despite this, he claimed he'd never been near those woods, although he later recanted and instead said that he sometimes takes the back roads. After confirming this, a cadaver dog was brought in along with a team of police that checked the same area to find disturbed ground, which to them meant signs of a burial. Police searched the overturned earth to find a white bra and a pair of dark-colored stockings, tied up in an efficient knot. There was also a zip tie found nearby, and when shown the clothing, Linda's family confirmed that this bra and knot were both of the style that Linda sported. It's with all this confirmation that the detectives formed a belief that Justo was in fact to blame for Linda's kidnapping, and that harm may have been done to her after all. They called for a warrant, and later that day, in the heat of all their findings, they approached and arrested Justus at his place of work. There, he was charged with kidnapping and false imprisonment, and has since refused to publicly comment on the case himself. However, that's not the end of things. Justo, who is being held at Lancaster County Prison without possibility of bail, has allegedly been chatty in ways that don't bode well. Namely, it's said that he bragged while incarcerated that, quote, "can't be convicted of murder with no body," end quote, according to an anonymous corrections officer at the prison. It should be noted that this comment, though damning when first heard, is only the result of hearsay and has not been provided by Justo in writing. What's more, Justo's defense attorney attempted to poke holes in the evidence provided for Justo's trial, including a specific jab at the video itself, which he argues cannot be identified as more than pixels, much less a person on the road. In the same vein, he claimed that the view they had could not confirm the black trim that the red Kia Rio in Justo's possession was said to have. Another point of contention for most investigations like this is the effect that the COVID-19 pandemic has had on Justo's due process. Normally, Pennsylvania legislature requires the prosecuted to have a trial within 180 days of their arrest if they're being held without bail. However, the rampant virus has put the rule on hold, and the due process is taking longer than it would normally be forced to take. A new court date has yet to be assigned to Justo as of now. There have been some change in the investigation, if only a little. While Detective Jones was able to get warrants for Justo's car and apartment, there's one more thing that apparently was of interest to him in the days following their discovery of Justo's involvement: his smartphone. Phone records now indicate that Justo had shared 15 texts and multimedia messages with his brother, who is not a stranger to a criminal activity himself, on the day of Linda's disappearance. In fact, these messages were shown to have been sent between 1 and 3 p.m., the time period directly following Linda's supposed window of time on the road between home and church. In other words, from these findings, it's almost as if Justo picked up Linda and they began to text his brother, planning their next move. The context of these texts, though unsealed as of September 17th, still aren't known to the public. What has been revealed, though, is likely to cement the reasoning that the detectives have reached. Given their vicinity of the time of Linda's abduction, the detectives still believe, even after the unsealing of these texts, that Justo kidnapped Linda, and there's still no realistic reason why she would have gone with him willingly. Insofar, though, Justo pleads not guilty of the charges facing him, which is a far cry from the Justo that was adopted off the street at age 7, or even the 21-year-old seen in court for the 4 robberies he committed with his brother. That Justo, back in 2006, heard the judge offer him a chance at a lower sentence so he could lead a reasonable life. Justo responded in kind and spoke of his adoptive parents Deb and Vernon Smoker by saying, "They raised me better than this." He pointed to his parents who had agreed to support him when he made it out of prison, and he then turned back to Judge Madensbacher and apologized. Quote, "I'm sorry for what I did and the people I hurt, including my family, but I'm glad they're here," end quote. Whatever the case all those years ago, the man that stands before trial for Linda's disappearance is a different one, unapologetic and confident that he can't be touched. And yet, there's proof in the pudding that this man, more than anyone else, has the answer to what happened to Linda that June afternoon. The Amish community, as one might expect, has stayed very much in touch and active regarding the news of Linda's disappearance. Search parties have driven out to several locations, and though each has turned up no leads, the investigators have refused to disclose them due to their possible status as crime scenes. That said, one of the searches that occurred in late August spanned 940 acres in the Welsh Mountain area. Hundreds of volunteers, as well as police departments and professional rescue teams, came to aid in the effort, although to no avail. There's even a Facebook page run by Linda's uncle, Mervyn Fisher, organizing prayer vigils for his missing niece. Mervyn states that support and care has spilled in from all corners, including places as far as the United Kingdom and Holland. With so many prayers coming in, it's evident that all hope is pointed toward finding Linda, whose disappearance is still fresh on the minds of the Amish, of bird in hand, most of all. Still, there are others who have things to say and compassion to show. During this time, many Amish people have noted the connection between Linda's case and the case of Evelyn Fisher, who in 1980 disappeared from the New Holland area. She was later found to have been kidnapped and killed. And so many have used this comparison to speculate, given that Evelyn was a 14-year-old Amish girl herself. Evelyn Fisher's mother, Ruth, went to be with Linda's family in July to give them some comfort, much like the comfort she received from others when she learned about her own daughter's disappearance 40 years ago. When Ruth's neighbor, a man named Gerald Zimmerman, was charged for the crime, he was proven to have mental instabilities that made it harder to continue with the process. His wife had left him. He'd left a suicide note. And a defense psychiatrist eventually noted that Zimmerman saw, quote, his wife in little Evelyn Fisher. It was theorized that he actually made his way to the Welsh Mountains and killed her there. Such locale and vicinity, along with other facts, make this story eerily similar to that of Linda. Ruth, as a result, felt that she should be there for the family and offered her prayers to them as well. The only other thing she could give is a bit of advice, not for Linda's family, but for the Smoker family. She said that the best thing they could do is be there for Justo. Her experience with Zimmerman 40 years before was only eventually solved thanks to Zimmerman's sister, who visited him enough to get him to open up about it. When he did, he offered information that led to Evelyn's discovery. And Ruth thinks that if there's anything that can get that closure for Linda's family, it will be a breakthrough like that. Whether it's Justo or his family that knows something, they should tell the police. It should be noted that police have stopped their searches for now until they receive better, more specific tips regarding areas of interest in the investigation. Anyone listening today, make sure to report to the Pennsylvania State Police with any information that they have on the red Kia Rio owned by Justo Smoker on or after June 20th of 2020. The license plate number of his vehicle is KYB9713 for the state of Pennsylvania. Police have special interest in hearing from anyone residing in Lancaster County. Anyone who has private surveillance camera footage that contains a vehicle possibly matching this description on June 20th or afterward are also asked to contact state police at 717-299-7650. Again, that's 717-299-7650. This case is still ongoing, but the lives of the Amish of Bird in Hand are forever interrupted by this tragic disappearance. In a world apart, Amish people are often able to go about their lives without having the same troubles we do, a perk of a small, intimate communities. However, when a stranger comes in and destroys this sense of peace, it does more than ruin a life. It harms the existence of the whole community. But this sense of community, this outpouring of hearts, these many hands that labor with yours and pray for you in your time of need, that's a thing well worth protecting. So please, stay vigilant and look out for each other. Whether you're taking a long journey or just a walk down the road, it could save you from the worst kind of stranger. Hey, listeners, and thanks once again for listening to Devil We Know. We're happy to be back and to be sharing with you the true crime stories that we find interesting and important. We always appreciate you as listeners, and if you want to give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts this week, that would be awesome. I'll even give you a shout out on the show. Just leave your name, or you can email me your name at devilweknowpodcast@gmail.com. If you're hungry for early episodes or ad-free episodes, you can join our Patreon for $1. Sometimes we release short stories on there as well when we have time. Just go to patreon.com and search for Devil We Know. This episode of Devil We Know was researched by Chantel York and written by David Wayne Young as usual. Music and editing is provided by Chase Gray. Does a phenomenal job. I'm also your host, Aaron. And until next time, keep your head on a swivel.